Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
And welcome in, everybody, to another edition of Sports Daily. It's a Tuesday, April 23rd. Glad to be here with you as we continue to count down to the NFL draft. Plenty on that today. Plenty on some Major League Baseball as the Royals drop the opener there. We've got big news for the Kansas City Chiefs that we'll get into. A big day for you as well, as we've got a giveaway for you, some HTO tea and coffee. We'll do that a little later in the show. Glad to be able to do that for you. We've got programming coming up tonight to tell you about all kinds of good stuff. Jake Albrecht here, Tommy Kester. Alongside me, Chad Chambers is driving, manning that IHOP hotline at 869-1240. You can get in touch with the program on that IHOP hotline. You can call in. We'll put you on the air, let us know what you're thinking about. You can also leave us your comments on our video streams. You'll find those video streams on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. Just search KFH, Sports Daily KFH, and you can find all that. Welcome in, everybody. Tommy, how are you this morning?
I'm good. Happy Tuesday. A lot to get to, as always, on the show today. Like, what, 48 hours? A little over 48 hours away from the NFL draft. So that's another big storyline. Just a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, the Broncos make a quarterback move that we can sort of get into a little bit. There's all kinds of good stuff today. Everything, though, is really going to focus on the draft. Tyreek Hill in the news a little bit. It has to do with his number and Isaiah Pacheco and, you know, all kinds of good stuff. Look, the draft is an amazing phenomenon, Tommy, because it takes over everything in the sports world. You know, like, we have the NBA playoffs beginning. We have Major League Baseball kind of hitting its stride. But for this time, it's all about the draft. And it is wild to imagine that a draft has become this must-see TV spectacle. I think it's one of the great achievements, I guess you could call it, or whatever, of, like, broadcast television. The fact that it has become this television event that we can't miss is pretty wild. It's pretty wild. And, the other sports try to do it. We saw the WNBA draft with Caitlin Clark get, record ratings for it. But, the OG was this NFL draft. And I don't think any of the other sports get anywhere near the drama and intrigue of this. I don't know whose brainchild this all is. It's incredible. It's one of the most amazing things ever. And I'm a junkie for it. I love the draft. I don't follow it nearly as closely leading up to as I used to as far as the players go. But the event itself, now they move it around. They do all these things. It's awesome. It's so exciting. I'm so excited about the draft coming up.
Remember last year when it was in Kansas City and how much fun that was to watch and just be able to experience all of that and just, of course, everybody converging on Kansas City for that. There's a reason why it's gone to a three-day spectacle. And, people just dive into it and they eat it up, and there's a lot of money to be made, on the NFL draft, whether we're talking about wagering or we're talking about analysis or whatever. It's definitely something that, outside of maybe the first couple of picks, usually it's hard to point at one player being drafted that can absolutely change the fortunes of a franchise forever outside of a couple of picks each year. But that's what makes the intrigue so high. That's what makes people lock in, especially if you've been a long-suffering fan of a franchise that's been bad for a long time. Your hopes and dreams often each year are in the NFL draft, and that your team will figure it out and draft that guy that's going to turn things around for you.
Just talking to Brandon Zinner, colleague over at KWich, who has covered the Chiefs so closely forever, but it is, by trade, a Vikings fan. And that was him. He's like, I'm going to turn everything off. I'm going to try to enjoy this because for the first time in forever, we're picking up. It's probably going to be a quarterback. Like, there's a lot of intrigue around that team. And yeah, that's it for a lot of teams. Like, you don't get this, like the Bears, right? They haven't had a quarterback in forever. And they think they're going to get one here. They're confident, and they know who's even going to be picked. But Bears fans are going to be totally locked in on this thing. If you go up and down the board, what we have not had in the draft, I don't remember the last time we had any question at the top of this thing. It's been a while since we've come in and not known who the first pick was going to be well in advance. So that would be, you know, something would be nice to get back to. The other thing now is you do almost have to detach yourself if you're going to watch it, because social media has sort of ruined it, right? Like, it spoils picks all the time, and you don't even want it to, right? I get it. Everybody's doing their job, but like, it is a better experience if you take it in on television instead of knowing who's going to be picked before they're picked, the surprise factor of it. So I try to do the same thing. And I think you guys probably know me well enough to know, and I'm not like constantly on there. I'm not tracking things. I see things later. But it is much better without getting your picks spoiled. When that first started, it drove me nuts when you know, the picks would get. So I have to like get out of it. But it's hard because sometimes you want to go to social media right for the reaction of a pick. You know, that's what we do. We want the reaction. I need to see what people are thinking about this. And then you get the next one spoiled. So it's a little more challenging to watch it probably than it used to be.
I think you have to credit ESPN, though. I mean, I know that in the advent of social
100%.
Media, it's become tougher. But, man, like, they took it to the next level and over the years has made it into this major spectacle. And just, you know, the intrigue and interest around it, just I feel like it grows year in and year out. And it's funny because, you know, if you look back and I thought about this yesterday in the middle of our conversation about what, you know, like the Patriots are going to do at pick number 3. And, you know, we always have all of this discussion, and everybody does, about what the top teams are going to do at the top of the draft and trading up and trading down and all of that. It's funny because while the draft is still incredibly important, it's not as important as it was before free agency. You know, before free agency,
well,
you drafted
sure,
players, and like, unless there was a trade, you had that player for their entire career for the most part. You know, and so teams absolutely leaned on their draft picks for forever. I mean, for the foreseeable future. In the world of free agency, I'm not saying that it drops the importance of the draft, but what I'm saying is that teams have other ways to be able to build up a roster and to be able to get better as opposed to just drafting a player at the top of the draft. And so it's funny that in spite of where football has gone in the last 30 years, we've got the draft continuing to be probably the biggest thing. Well, definitely the biggest thing in the offseason. I think on top of it too, you know, you've got a bunch of fans of the NFL, and I'm one of them and you're one of them, that are craving NFL content now that the season is done.
Yeah.
And this is the best way to kind of get that, you know, and to hold you over until the start of the regular season.
I do think, you know, I think the draft sort of stands on its own. On the NFL, like, when we get to training camps and stuff, I think that's more of we're like fiending for the NFL. I really do think the draft has become this standalone phenomenon. And I don't know if it was the NFL's brainchild to do that. I don't know if it was ESPN's brainchild. In all the great things ESPN has done in, you know, in forever, this may be at the top of the list based on, like, you know, a lot of the time their greatness has come just, you know, you're following games and events and, you know, whether it's PTI and sort of this invention of, you know, hot takes and sports talk, whatever that is, like, that would be one of them. You know, Sports Center's obviously at the very top of the list. Man, the NFL draft is right there with anything. And if you think about, like, all their personalities, Mel Kiper is as probably valuable a commodity and personality to the growth of that network as anybody else. This draft is it was kind of like created out of nothing, like the television event of it anyway. It's wild that it did that. And they made a movie out of it. And not just a movie, like a Kevin Costner movie.
And
that's
it's a
how
great
fascinated
movie.
We're.
I know a lot of people don't like it. I love it. It's one of those movies.
It's fine, yeah.
One of those movies that I don't care when it's on. If I'm flipping through and it's on, I'm going to stop and I'm going to watch the rest of it. Love that movie.
So we're big draft guys. We'll continue to follow it. And it's so funny, too. I've said this before. Like, I used to be able to tell you all the players for probably 4 or 5 rounds. Knew about the players. Was doing research. And this was before the internet, right? You'd get, like, a newspaper and read up on prospects. And, you know, all the publications would put their stuff out. I don't do that anymore. And I still love it just as much. Like, Tommy, we'll get out of the first round, and most of the players, I'm not going to know who they are. I mean, I will. I shouldn't say that. I'll know who they are, but, like, I don't have a strong take about them, and it's still just as fascinating to me. The whole thing, I just love it. And it is, I really do think this is going to be a high-drama year for this NFL draft. I went back yesterday to start a look at some of these players, Tommy, and just see, like, real good football people that I generally go to consume in-season stuff and, like, scouting and all that stuff to try to see, you know, some prospect ideas. I'm going to tell you, quarterbacks, man, like, I don't want to say we're taking it for granted, but these quarterbacks are grading high for evaluators, right? Like, real high. I read one yesterday that had J.J. McCarthy as the best quarterback prospect in this class, and, like, really high-end type prospect. And I think it's because there's 4 or 5 of them we've maybe sort of thought of. It's almost like it's knocked them down, but we forget, like, this is and has been considered. We've known this was coming for 3 years, that this was going to be one of the more talented quarterback classes. And we have it. And there's a chance that all of these guys are really good, which is also very interesting to see who lands where. But it'll be great. The Chiefs will be there. And then the news, Tommy, of yesterday, we know that the brainchild of the Chiefs. And I do think this is important for the draft. The Chiefs basically lock up everybody through the end of the decade. Mark Donovan, Brett Veach, Andy Reid. Clark Hunt came in, so, you know, the high-end decision-makers for the on-field product of the Kansas City Chiefs, Veach, Donovan, Reid, are all locked in now to the end of the decade. That's important, I think, because there's absolutely no pressure now to take a big swing or a big risk in this draft, right? If you know that you're not going to shoot yourself in the foot down the road by doing something wild and crazy here, I think you have the ability to be more aggressive. And that's not, like, think about that. Like, you have to, as an executive in the NFL, as much turnover as there is, decisions, I think, if we're being honest, are made all the time that are protecting the short term and protecting jobs versus, you know, maybe the best thing long term. And so to have that continuity, not only is it a big advantage for the Chiefs, and we'll get into that piece of it, but as it relates to the draft, that's a big deal. And I think it makes it more likely for them to take some big risks because they know, like, it doesn't matter. If they fail, it's not like they're going to lose their job. If they fail, it'll be fine.
One of the things I really am happy about with that news yesterday is that, I mean, obviously it's well, well, well deserved by all three of those guys, but everybody focuses, and rightfully so, on Andy Reid and Brett Veach. I'm glad Mark Donovan got some love as well. He's been with the franchise since 2009. And if you think back to 2009, you think about the Todd Haley years, you think about the Romeo Crennel years, you think about how bad they were, how terrible they were. You know, got to a point to where, you know, he joined in 2009 and then he became the president in 2011. And there was a lot of turmoil and there's been a lot of transition in his 15 years with the organization. You don't hear about Mark Donovan a whole lot because, you know, he a lot of times, I think, stays away from the on-the-field decision-making and kind of leaves that up to Veach and Reid. And I think that's really helpful. But so many different things, you know, that he's been a part of and a major driving force on with the organization as a whole. And to me, when you're announcing that extension alongside Veach and Reid, I know he's the president of the team, but he's the least visible out of the three. I think it shows that he's essential to this success and what they're building as a dynasty in Kansas City. So I was happy to see that. You know, like I mentioned, I don't think he gets a lot of love. People kind of focus on, even if you want to go above Reed and Veach, a lot of people focus on Clark Hunt and his family. Mark Donovan's in there right there too, you know, and he's been a crucial part of the success they've had.
He's about to have his hands full, Tommy. Like, that's that part's important, I think, organizationally for the Chiefs, because they're about to have to make a big decision on a stadium, and he's going to be a big part of that. Like, maybe the biggest part of that, I think, outside of Clark Hunt. A lot of that's going to come down to Mark Donovan. He's going to be at least the front-facing. Yep. I don't know how to rank it in with what Veach and Reed are responsible for, but it's important. And for the organization, it's really important. I don't know how much it impacts, you know, one way or the other, the things that happen on the field. I don't imagine. I mean, maybe on contract negotiations, I suppose, but I don't imagine Mark Donovan gets into Andy Reid and Brett Veach's business too much that often, right? Like, I think that's kind of a separate thing, but it's still important for the organization, because now we're going to see a whole lot of Mark Donovan, because they're going to, whatever it is that happens with the stadium, he's going to be at the front of it. He's going to be at the face of it. Like, he will be the mouthpiece, I think, for, you know, the team on it. So, you know, having him there is obviously important. I think for fans, the other two are the ones you get excited for, right? You get excited that Andy Reid now looks like he may have a chance at the coaching record. The fact that Andy Reid would take that extension should, I think, end any discussion on whether he has any interest in retiring. I don't think that he does, clearly. You just don't see general managers stick around for that long in the NFL. They just don't. And what would that put? When did Brett Veach start that job? He got the job, what, in 20? Let me just take a look here. If he goes through 2029.
He's been with the team since 2013. But he's
got
been
the
GM
job
since
in
2017.
So he would be, if he goes out the end of this contract, he will have had the job for 13 years. You know, and that's just, you know, he could, of course, sign another extension at that point. Yep. That's a long time for an NFL GM.
And what people don't remember, and I didn't know this until recently, that he started his career with the Eagles and Andy Reid. He was a scout for them. He was an intern. Yep. You know, and so he's been with Andy Reid for a long time, followed him to Kansas City. There's that continuity there that, you know, goes back 20 years between those two guys. Every time I look at Brett Veach, you know, he's 46. He looks younger than that, I think. And so I always like think he's younger than what he actually is. He's been around for a long time, and he's been with Andy Reid since he was in his mid-20s, you know, and so they've been able to build that and grow that and, you know, keep that going, you know, long-term, which has been, you know, really absolutely important. Going back to Mark Donovan too, you know, he spent time with the Eagles also. He was with the Eagles in the mid-2000s, Mark Donovan did. So all three of those guys, you know, have quite a bit of familiarity with each other and have worked together for a long time too.
And the wildest thing of all of it, it's always got to be a perfect storm in the NFL. But if we want to circle back to the draft and you want to talk about the importance of getting quarterback right, is Andy Reid still the coach of the Chiefs if they don't have the Patrick Mahomes decision? If Brett Veach, if they don't evaluate him that way and go up and get him, do any of these guys still have their jobs? I don't know. I think that's a stretch, probably. Because Alex Smith wouldn't still be playing, so what do you do right at that point? It is fascinating to me to think about how much Patrick Mahomes impacts in the community, on his team. It's wild. Like, these three guys, like, everybody looks smarter because he's under center. Now, again, it's a perfect storm, and I'm not taking it away, because it is a perfect storm for Patrick Mahomes too to have Andy Reid. Right, and it's been a perfect storm for Brett Veach to be able to build around him and knows, you know, the things to do for him better than anybody. So it's wild. A couple of comments here. Jason on our video stream says he thinks it'll be an historic year for trades in round one. He calls it the over under 9.5 round one.
In round
trades.
One,
I would say
a
go
lot
under
of trades
on
round one.
Round one, that would be a lot. But it will be a lot. I will agree with Jason on this. I would not be surprised at all if there is a record for trades set. I'm telling you, These teams all want to trade down. It's like the new trendy hot button thing to do, which is why, again, why I think there's a chance to zig when they're zagging. But I think a lot of teams are going to want to trade down. So, yeah, maybe an historic year for trades. I don't think they're going to get to 10 trades, though, in the first round, every three picks. That would be a, that would be pretty wild. Ken, you know, cue the Debbie Downer music, says, feeling better about my life after listening to all this fawning over watching some names announced. Yawn. Ken would like us to talk about the Kansas City Royals 24 hours a day,
get
7
days a
week. Get on board,
Ken. Come on, man.
And we appreciate that, Ken. And we will talk about the Royals in just a little bit. But it's getting close to draft day. Chiefs have some big decisions to make, and they make some big, big, big front office commitments, which seem like no-brainers, right? No surprise. Speaking of the Chiefs, Tyreek Hill in the news a couple of times here. I don't think it's anything bad. I do think it's sort of interesting. One thing I'll say about Tyreek Hill, he's brutally honest. He's honest. His whatever, if it's a podcast, like, it's interesting because he just is very honest about everything. We'll talk about what he's in the news for here a couple of times when we return. It's Albrockton Caster. It's Sports Daily. IHOP hotline's open, 869-1240. Don't go away. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Interesting news. It's fine with Tyreek Hill coming up. So yesterday, I don't know when he said it. Yesterday is when I saw it. Tyreek Hill was asked about the number 10, and he was tipping his cap to Isaiah Pacheco a little bit on the number 10, but he did admit that it kind of hurt his feelings a little bit that they gave Pacheco number 10. I will say this. I get it. I appreciate his honesty there. I don't know if there was any intent there from the Chiefs. It is a little strange that a running back, and maybe it's as simple as Pacheco just liked the number 10 and they were like, okay, you can have it. But it's a little strange that after he left, they immediately give somebody the number 10. I don't think he was complaining about it. I think he was just being, well, yeah, for sure. But I don't think he was trying to make it a big deal. I think he was just being honest. He was like, yeah, that kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. You know, I was number 10 there, and they immediately give it. But I don't know if Pacheco wanted 10 or if they were like, you should wear number 10. Because it's not like that was it wasn't a bad breakup between the Chiefs and Tyreek Hill. It was as good a breakup as you could possibly have.
Yeah, and I absolutely have, you know, respect and love for Tyreek Hill and what he did in Kansas City, for sure. But I don't know if there's another player in the NFL that talks more about his former team than Tyreek Hill does about the Chiefs. And I think it's to the point now where it doesn't matter what podcast he's doing, what show he's on, doesn't matter. They're going to ask him about the Chiefs because they know he's going to answer the question because he is brutally honest. But man, like, I'm at the point now, like, if I were him, I would just be like, nah, look, I'm done. I'm focused on Miami. Like, there's no reason for me to talk about the Chiefs, no reason for me to answer any questions about the Chiefs. They're my former team. I got love for them. I love Andy Reid, love Patrick Mahomes, love all of them. I'm not interested in talking about them, you know, right now. But every single time, he's talking about the Chiefs. He's asked the question, but he's talking about them. Talks more. I get it, but you don't have to answer. And I'm not saying his answer was bad. I'm just saying,
I think it was like on a podcast.
All I'm saying is that, like, there comes a point where you're like, dude, move on. Like, yeah. Move on.
He never will. You know, there are times all the time. He's never going to replicate that time in his career for a lot of reasons, right? One, it was a Super Bowl. You were playing with Mahomes. You know, you had your revelation there. Now everybody expects this out of him. It'll never be the same. It's that way for a lot of us, right? That first job and, you know, the people you came up with and all that stuff, it hits a little different. I think he's just, I believe this was just on his own podcast, and he just to talk about anything, including the other thing that came out that I thought was pretty funny is he told the story of how he got called out by Mike McDaniel after L'Jarius Sneed just sort of owned him a little bit. He said he called him out and basically said, what do we pay you in the game? Like, you know, dropping MFers, like, what do we pay you all this money for? I love that. And Tyreek Hill said he loved it too. He's like, that response to that. And that's the thing. Like, I think sometimes people like get their feelings hurt when they hear mic'd up. Like, you got to understand how these dudes are wired and how they talk to each other. And it's not that odd. And it really isn't that odd if you relate it either to your own. Like, if you're trying to get fired up and you really have a solid and close relationship with somebody, there are a lot of things you can say to them that you would absolutely not say to other people. And it's fine. And I love that inside baseball kind of stuff when you hear about those stories that are happening because you don't see them. Another thing, we talked about the draft, a thing the NFL does well. Another thing it does well, man, NFL films. It's a big reason why it is as popular as it is because they do take us inside that stuff. They've never shied away from that stuff. And so to hear that was kind of cool. But yeah, Tyreek Hill in the news a little bit. You know, the Chiefs, Tommy, some would say still trying to replace Tyreek Hill. I don't know that he's replaceable. We go back to that age-old question. Brett Veach last week sure didn't make any bones about the possibility of going up to get a receiver. Like that, you know, I don't know if they're, you know, playing mind games or what they're doing. They're not shying away from that possibility. And so it had me sort of wondering, even if Rashee Rice's off-the-field situation wasn't lingering, how prone to an early wide receiver do you think the Chiefs would be here? You know, is there room? And maybe this is, and here's what it has me really thinking about, is life after Travis Kelce. And I haven't really thought about this way when receiver has come up. Travis Kelce's not his value in production on this team, whenever it is that he decides to be done, is not going to be replaced by a tight end. And you're talking about an organization that's had maybe the two of the three greatest, probably, tight ends of all time. Tony Gonzalez and Travis Kelce. The other would be Gronk, I think, for most people. But you've had those two. So you have, even with this rich history of tight ends, whenever he's done, it's not going to be a tight end that replaces what he does and his value. And that does have me wondering now a little bit, even if Rice was not to miss any games, how much value, even with Hollywood Brown there, right? How much value would there be to take a swing at one of these blue chippers? Now, you'd have to trade way up to have a shot at any of those three. Neighbors, Adunze, Marvin Harrison Jr. We're talking like probably top 10, I would bet. I don't think any of those three is sliding out of the top 10. And that's a lot. I don't know, but it is interesting that they're not shying away from that possibility.
Well, I do think that if they take a wide receiver in round number one, whether they stay at 32 or they trade up to go get somebody else, I think that when they do that, that will tell you, or if they do that, that will tell you a lot of different things. That will tell you how they feel, I think, about Wanya Morris at left tackle, if they think that Wanya Morris can be a starter at left tackle, at least for this season. You know, and of course, they could always go out and sign a veteran left tackle like a Donovan Smith for another one-year deal if they wanted to. But if they go and they do that, I think that will tell you a couple different things. I mean, I think at the front end, you could say, well, maybe they didn't like any of the offensive tackle options that were available to them at the time that they were picking. But I think more than anything else, we know it's kind of a deep offensive tackle class as well as it is deep wide receiver class. I think it probably tells you that maybe they scout out Wanya Morris to be a viable starter at left tackle. He didn't get a ton of playing time last year. You know, he ended up starting a couple of games when Donovan Smith was out with injury, but really we didn't get a chance to fully see what they thought of Wanya Morris, because the bottom line is that, you know, if they don't take a left tackle, let's say they don't sign a veteran, right? They don't sign a veteran left tackle, but they also don't take a left tackle with their first round pick. That would mean that they probably don't think that anybody on their draft board is an upgrade from Wanya Morris, who they drafted in the third round a year ago. So I think it's going to tell me more about what they think at left tackle if they take a wide receiver early in the first round.
Well, if they pick at 32... I don't think it really tells us anything. If they pick at 32, I don't think it tells us anything. I think they're just picking at that point. If they move up, to take a wide receiver, I think it would tell us that they love that wide receiver, right? That means that that's somebody they really, really like. If they stand pat at 32, I don't know what it tells us about their overall thoughts on a player other than that's just a guy they like at that point.
But I also think that from a wide receiver perspective, if they do take a wide receiver in the first round, again, whether they stay at 32 or they trade up, I think it will be very important to pay attention to what kind of wide receiver that person is. If that wide receiver is a deep threat, then it probably tells you that the Chiefs are not super concerned about really the long-term ramifications of what's going on with Rashee Rice. If that wide receiver has similar skills as Rashee Rice, then that might tell you that they are concerned about his availability next season. So I do think that there are, you know, a couple of different ways to look at it. If they do go wide receiver in the first round, you'll want to pay very close attention to the kind of wide receiver that they're targeting. Because remember, they already got Hollywood Brown. You know, he's a deep threat kind of guy. You know, so do they go for another deep threat? You know, a couple names that have been tossed around a lot, that Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, you know, is a guy that has kind of similar skills as Rashee Rice. You know, there are others, but do they go the route of like Xavier Worthy from Texas, who's a deep threat? You need to pay attention to that too if they end up going wide receiver in the first round.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think they need it. They don't need, like, from that wouldn't make sense, the Texas guy, right? If you're just taking it for speed because you got Hollywood Brown. I'm talking about
if you end up drafting a wide receiver that has a similar skill set to Rashee Rice. At that point, then you pay attention to, are they concerned about Rice's availability in the season?
Yeah, his skill set's pretty... He's kind of good at everything.
Well, he's a yak. I mean, he's a yards after catch guy.
Yeah.
So if you look at a receiver that is a yards after catch threat... Maybe. And there are a few of them in the first round.
But I do think there is a possibility, too, yeah, that he's replacing Kelsey. Kelsey's a yak guy, too, in this offense. I really do think they would just have to love the player. And they would view this player as a superstar if they go that route. And to me, it still doesn't seem likely, right? It still seems like they would do what they've always done and take those guys a little bit later. I don't think outside of those big three, and there's a lot of good receivers in this class. I think there is a tier for sure, but I do think people generally like this receiver class. Just, you know, those top three are all potential game record type players. And I don't think they'll be in a position to get any of them, by the way. I think it's far more likely if they were able to move up that it would be into the range to get one of those tackles. But I do like the idea of, if we see them move up, they're going to love that player, whoever it is, because they've always been perfectly content to just sort of chill at their spot and take somebody. If they move up, it tells us they're in love with the player. Different than taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire, taking Felix Anudike-Uzomah. You know, I think, though, if you look at those players, I think of the recent history, most people, and it's way too early on Anudike-Uzomah, but generally speaking, I think people would look at those and be like, that didn't really work out. But the reality is they were just willing to sort of swing on guys at that point because they didn't really, the risk level was low. If they move up, the risk level goes up some, I think. That tells you it's not just they're following their board, but they really love a player. And when they really love a player, Tommy, they've been pretty good when that happens, right? And Patrick Mahomes is the obvious example. So it's there. It's interesting. It's fascinating. And I still think it's going to be left tackle. I guess it could be receiver. They do have a need at corner. Like, that is an area of need for
them. It is, but then, you know, we haven't really seen them be active this offseason. Maybe they can attack it in the draft, but we haven't seen them be, you know, that active in the secondary so far this offseason. That tells me, and again, they could use a draft pick on a cornerback, and they probably will, I would imagine, at some point in the draft. I think they feel pretty good about Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson. I think they like them and the flashes that those two guys have shown alongside Trent McDuffie. So that may not be, you know, I don't think it's absolutely nearly as big of a priority as some of these other positions that we've talked about. Yeah, it's a downgrade in that unit because they don't have L'Jarius Sneed this coming season. But I think they feel pretty good about the guys that they currently have in-house.
They do. I think they feel better about that than the other positions we've talked about. But again, if somebody's sitting there, like, it's probably worth thinking about. And when, you know, when you're trying to play chess and not checkers, like, what if they could identify another great corner now, and then McDuffie's not a guy they'll have to pay down there because he's going to be even more expensive than Sneed was. They got a lot of options. It's a good problem to have. They got options here, so it's certainly a good problem. And we'll continue to look at it, and we'll continue to try and read up on some of these players a little bit between now and then. There are a lot of people chiming in, giving great perspective on some of these players. We'll do it. When we return, as we make our way forward, I should say, we'll talk a little Royals baseball, losers last night. You can watch our video stream on Facebook, on YouTube, and on X. Good stuff there. You can call in on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. Don't go away. Sports Daily coming right back. Welcome back to Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrecht here alongside Tommy Caster. Glad to be with you. Mornings at KFH. Staff enjoys a great cup of coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee, getting us fueled up here. I want to tell you that this portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club, getting you ready for a big night. Shocker baseball back in action, 6:15 against Oklahoma there tonight. Tommy, it's getting to be golf weather. We're going to have some weather to deal with this week, but we've got to get our little Crestview bet paid off here, where I owe you beers on the golf course because the Braves took the Rangers series. I don't know time of day. Is this 18 holes? Do I got to pay 18 holes worth of beer here? Is it 9 holes? Like, we didn't come up with very many stipulations on this.
Yeah, I'm not going to accept, you know, just 9 holes. So you've got a couple of different choices. We can either play 18 holes and you can buy my beer, or we can just spend a few hours, you know, at the bar, you know, and do it that way. Either way, it's probably going to be the same amount of beer. So, you know, just depends on if you want to actually play golf while you're paying off that bet, or if you just want to, you know, sit and listen to me talk.
That's an interesting dilemma for me, because golf sounds great, but it's still that time of year where I'm not fully rounded into form. Maybe we pop up there, watch a Royals game.
Maybe
we pop up there, watch a Royals game, have a few beers. We'll do it.
You know, you could even, I don't think my kids are old enough for this, but I think yours are. You know, you could even bring them along, and, you know, if it's the right time of day or the right day of the week, they've, you know, kind of got like activities and like entertainment and things like that, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so like you can, you can kind of like
just signed up,
drop your kids off and like let them, you know, be taken care of.
Yeah, we're almost there. We're not quite there, but we did just go get them signed up. They're getting ready for swim team. That's been like the big thing for us, like the biggest thing. That pool, I've told you that pool. Well, the swim team like unlocked the competitiveness of our oldest daughter. So now we've got, you know, our middle daughter in there. And, you know, as soon as our son finishes learning how to swim, we hope this year he's going to be on there, because we did. Like, my wife and I are ultra competitive, and to sit and not have kids that were ultra aggressive, and we were totally unreasonable because they're way too young, has been hard. But then we get them, we did swim team, and our oldest, like, I don't know if it was the thrill of the race, and now she's pretty competitive at everything she tries. And it's like, you're all doing swim team. Like, everybody's going to do that so we can get out there and yell appropriately. We have volleyball tonight. Big volleyball matchup tonight, as we're in volleyball and soccer season right now, and about to be in swim team season.
So,
that'll be the three we're chasing.
Yeah.
For
let me ask you a quick swim team question, because I didn't do swim team growing up.
I don't know how to swim properly.
Yeah, like I don't have any kind of knowledge about the world of swim team. When you go, because I'm guessing you go to like different pools for the competitions, right? Are you able to like lounge in the pool with a cocktail while you're watching?
No. And it's tough. You can get a cocktail, I think, if you want one, but you can't get in the water. So, you know, we get to the middle of the summer and it's
brutally
humid,
hot, yeah.
And it's hot and it's early in the morning, but it's still, you're sweating and there's this pool just staring at you in the face.
Why can't they close off like a portion of the pools where the parents can just chill and watch the swim?
If you understood the rat race of a swim meet, it is like you draw on the kids so that people can help shuttle them to where whatever race and number they need to go to. You seriously take a Sharpie and you draw on their back or their chest or whatever to help find. It's wild. It is an experience. There are, you know, hundreds of kids and they're shuttling around and you got to get them lined up and get them in the water. And it, you know, they're running races and holy cow. It is a wild experience, but it's fun. We've enjoyed it. It's one of the things that we probably enjoyed the most. So we did just get signed up for that and we'll see how it goes. Our girls who have been in there have improved every race, every year, everything. So
I promise you, there would be a higher level of participation in swim team from a parent's perspective. They would want their kids to be involved if they could actually get in the pool and relax and hang out while the swim meet's going on.
It ain't
going
to happen. You'll get there. Once your oldest gets at that age and you do it, you'll see
why.
You'll see why it's – well, it doesn't matter if you encourage it. Your wife will encourage it.
Why?
Your wife will – because everybody's doing it.
Eh.
I mean, if everybody else is doing it, you know, you got to do it. It's just the way it is. All right, we'll come back. Hour number two, we'll start it with some Royals talk when we return on Sports Daily.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Welcome to hour number two of the program. Tom, I'm a little distracted. I think somebody just stole a lot of money from one of our businesses.
What?
That's not to bring everybody into the weeds, but like a check was cashed by somebody the check was not made out to. So I'm not sure how that happens. But it happened, and it was a large check for one of the businesses. So I'm trying to figure out what in the hell is going on.
You need me to take over here for a little bit while you get to the bottom of it? Or are you good?
Well, I don't know. I'm on a chat with the bank, and I don't know what to do. It's ruined my day, though. Maybe ruin a whole lot more than my day. I don't know what kind. I don't know what help or like coverage is. Like I'm frantically, what can we do here? What do we do?
Banks have insurance, right? Like, isn't that like...
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not a banker. I hope so. About to find out. I have a tendency to like go nuclear in about 2 seconds when things like this happen. So I'm trying to, you know, chill. It sucks because I just realized the check was cashed, you know, probably a week and a half ago, but it was, you know, it was cashed like always is. It's a normal recurring check. And so I just see that a check was cashed. I didn't look at the check image to see that some random person like washed the name.
Did you get Shohei Ohtani'd? Did you get...
I hope not.
Did you become best friends with his interpreter? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe without knowing it, maybe somebody else I know is secretly, you know, I don't think that I've given anybody access to bank accounts.
I think we ought to make that a thing. You know, like anytime anybody, you know, has fraud committed against them, you got Shohei'd or you got Ohtani'd. You know, anytime like somebody steals money from you, that guy got Ohtani'd. What an idiot. He just got Shohei'd. I like Shohei'd better. Yeah, that guy just got Shohei'd. So, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and trademark that. I think you got Shohei'd in this case. As long as, I wonder whoever like that person was that did that to you, as long as they're not using it for like sports wagering, then at that point, you know, maybe it's not quite Shohei'd, but you pretty much got Shohei'd in this case.
Yeah, I did. I don't know what it is. God dang it. This stupid stuff. Like, if you're out there and you're a thief, don't do that. Like, you just ruin everybody. It's one thing, like, you just ruin people's day. Right? Like you take the money. That's not that's the worst part of it. Don't misunderstand. That's the worst part of it. But it's not as bad as like how it just totally derails everything else that person has to deal with in their lives. Now I can't do anything else. I can't think of anything else. Like, I have to now deal with this. Like, who's out there doing that? If you're stealing the mail, kiss my rear. We'll say it that way. All right. Let's talk about the Royals, Tommy. We talked about yesterday the curiosity of the schedule so far. 10 of their wins this season have come against the three worst teams in the American League. They have not won a series yet against a team that has a winning record. They dropped the opener to Toronto. And the schedule now through May 8th is brutal. This is and the starting pitching's wavering a little bit. Like, I'm not saying it's panic time. It's not panic time, just like it wasn't time to overreact. But I'm starting to get a little nervous with the Royals, just a little bit.
I don't know what you're nervous about. I mean, I think that it's been pretty clear who these guys are and where their talent is, you know, what the ceiling is for this team. And yeah, I mean, you fall behind 5-0. Brady Singer gives up 5 runs. But again, I know that they're not getting over the hump, and I don't want to sound like a Royals apologist here, but they did battle back. You know, like they made it interesting, you know, towards the end of the game. And so I do think that that is something to keep in mind. Do they have the firepower to consistently do that against better teams? Probably not. But I think we also probably knew that going into the season, that as long as it was getting better and they were showing signs of that improvement, you know, then that was going to be okay. Now, the fact that they've, you know, lost 3 in a row at home, you know, and they, you know, lose the last 2 to Baltimore, they lose the opener against Toronto at home, like, yeah, that's not good. You don't want to see that at all. They're 13-10. They're still 3 games over .500. But you and I said yesterday on this show that if they finish that brutal stretch of games hovering around .500, that, you know, at that point you'd still feel fairly good about their prospects overall. I'm still in that boat. Again, barring some kind of like major collapse in the next 2 weeks, which I still don't think is likely, I still feel okay about them.
I feel okay about them. I still am, like, all the things that have made me happy to see, that none of that wavers, I don't think. The starting pitching kind of getting a little rocky would be the outlier to that. Because Vinny Pascantino is now on an 11-game hitting streak, and like all these good things are happening. It's not so much that as it's tempering expectations to maybe where they should be. You know, you get out to that kind of start, and it's like, hey, this team has a chance at a playoffs. I mean, I went and made a futures bet on them to win the World Series, yeah, just in case, right? I'm wondering if it shouldn't be more like get over the 73.5 wins, right, that they were put at before the season starts. Maybe we need to lower that bar. In fairness, just in fairness, because that's going to – it's 75 wins this year, I think, will feel successful regardless, unless they just had like some collapse at the end of the year or something. But I think we were maybe a little too trigger happy on putting that bar up there a little higher, when that might be a little unfair.
But who was doing that? I mean, I know you made a futures bet that they win the World Series, but
no,
that's
not
a little
that, but
fool's
I was,
goal, right?
I was ready to see if this team could contend for a playoff spot.
I think this
and
team
maybe
can
they're
contend
just
for a playoff spot. I'm not ready to write them
off.
I'm
going to say I
hope. But you
can
be.
I'm not writing them off, but I'm going to say hope instead of can.
You can be somewhere in the middle between they miss the playoffs and win the World Series. And again, like, I think it's been well documented, at least what our feelings are, my feelings are, about the AL Central. And yeah, I know that, you know, it's not like it's just a cakewalk. I mean, no division is. And the Guardians do look like they're the real deal. You know, they're 10 games over .500. Their run differential is pretty good. They're going to be probably the major factor in that division. The Tigers, I think, are kind of in the same boat as the Royals, where they're rebuilding and, you know, getting back on track. I think that they're still probably a little bit of a ways away. But I do think that the Royals still can contend in the AL Central. Are they a wild card team? Probably not, based on, you know, what we've talked about with just the American League in general. But I'm not willing to say yet, okay, like, they're going to finish with a losing record. I don't think that's on the table yet. They might still, but I do think that, you know, overall it's going to be a much improved record for this team?
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't want to be terribly disappointed, and I do think it's in the realm of possibilities that they're under 500 for sure, right?
I'm not ready to say that I think they're going to finish under 500. I don't know. I guess maybe I have a little bit more faith right now in what they're building and who they are. And it comes from, and I mentioned this yesterday, it actually comes from less of their wins and more in which the way that they're losing games. They did it last night too. They were down 5-0. They didn't have the firepower to get all the way back, but they were able to make it interesting towards the end. They did the same thing on Saturday night against Baltimore. Yeah, they were shut out in between those two games on Sunday, but there is a fight with this team that is better than what we've seen in close to a decade in Kansas City. And as the season goes on, they could very easily find themselves in a position where they do have the capability to battle all the way back in these games and to ultimately be able to get wins. I like seeing that as opposed to just folding up like a cheap table, you know, and being able to actually go out there and compete night in and night out. For that reason and that reason alone, I certainly don't think that they're going to finish under 500.
And under 500 is 81, 80 wins is under 500. You know, that's the problem, I think. And it's not a problem, and I'm not trying to be alarmist at all. I'm still very happy with the offseason. I'm still very happy with the start to this season. So I don't want it to be misunderstood by any means. I really like the starting rotation. With Pascantino heating back up, I like the top of the order. I think the bullpen is they're sort of rounding into form. They've been pretty good lately. There's a lot to still like,
There's a lot to like. They got Michael Massey back.
Isn't quite as high.
They got Michael Massey back, and will he be a key factor offensively for this team? Maybe. I think that there are flashes of, you know, good things from him. So I do think that, you know, that is something that you can look at as being a positive moving forward as well. I mean, look, if we're talking about a team that is 13-10 right now through the first 23 games, and, you know, about how we think that, you know, there might be some concerns there and they might be leaking water a little bit, I'd much rather have that conversation than the conversation that we had on April 23rd last year, right, where we knew that it was over before it even got started for this team. So, you know, I think that within the context of all of that, yeah, like I'm willing to look at this from a glass half full mentality.
I'm going to be glass right in the middle mentality, because I will say this. It is still a successful season if the team wins, let's call it 75 games. It will still have been a successful season. The moves they made will have been worth it, but it does add a little pressure to next season, I think. We'll see. Look, Bobby Witt Jr. is going to continue to get better. Vinny Pascantino is probably going to get a little better as the season goes on. Salvador Perez is, I've predicted, and I don't have any doubt about it, going to have more of a renaissance year, you know, if he can stay healthy, that gets him into some elite offensive numbers, especially for a catcher. And if all those things happen, they're going to win some games. I do have some concern that the starting pitching at home has been shaky now, what would we call it, 3 straight starts, and Lugo probably not as shaky as, you know, as Reagan's and then Singer last night. They really need Walker to kind of do his thing, right? You're a veteran. Get in there, settle things down a little bit, and let's see if he can bounce them back on that. Because, again, like, there's just no relief coming. The schedule until May 8th is absolutely terrible. Like, it's really, like, you got the Blue Jays, you got the Rangers, you got the Brewers. It's going to be tough. Over this stretch, and they only get one day off in that stretch too. So you got to go back and then forward. There's only one day off until May 8th. So it's a grind right now, and we'll learn a little bit about the team. It's exciting for that, you know, for that reason too. I think to see them, see if they can't rise up to this a little bit.
So I'm looking at, you know, the number of games between now and the end of this long stretch. So they've got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14 games between now and May 7th. So, you know, right before they kick off a four-game set on the road in Los Angeles to take on the Angels, they'll wrap up the homestand against Milwaukee. After those 14 games, and knowing what their record is right now at 13-10, where do you want to see these next 14 games at from a record perspective? Do they need to go 7-7 in these games?
Yeah.
Can they go?
Yeah. Do you think it needs to be 7-7? Yeah.
But then that mean like as we're talking about hovering around 500.
Because a lot of them are at home.
Then
I
think that the only, let me look here. So they're on the road against the Blue Jays and the Tigers. So yeah, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's six of, so 8 games are at home, 6 games are on the road. When we talk about hovering around 500, I mean their overall record when it's all said and done. So I think they could go in the next 14 games, you know, they could go 6-8, and I'd be okay with that. They could maybe even go 5-9 at the end of this stretch.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I'm like, okay, like they're still overall hovering around 500, so I feel okay about that. I don't think they need to go 7-7 or better in the next 14 games to still have a fairly optimistic view of this team.
I agree. The only problem with that is there will be no relief, I don't think.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
In the American League this year, right? I don't know that you're going to get many games against truly bad teams. Right now, the Astros are playing bad. We all know the Astros aren't a bad team. The Twins are playing bad. We all know the Twins aren't a bad team. We can point to the White Sox and say, that's a bad team. Maybe the A's, right? Although they've been playing pretty well. We think, you know, probably even is even more fair. The A's will be bad, but, you know, the A's have surprised us in the past. So maybe two. There's not, so when we're saying, you know, oh, maybe they go 5-9 in this stretch because they're playing really good teams, they're always going to be playing really good teams. They've already played 7 against the White Sox. They don't have many left against the White Sox the rest of the schedule. So it's, you just don't get it at all at any level in the American League. The American League is loaded this year. We've talked about, I mean, there really aren't bad teams. There's the White Sox and probably the A's, and that's it. That's it. So that's what has me worried too, is the pecking order, right? If 5-9 is good enough when you play bad teams, so if you extrapolate that out over, you know, over the entirety of the season, you're not looking at a very good season. So that's why it's like, well, maybe 5-9 isn't good enough. I know big picture getting, you know, being at 500, you're probably okay. But at some point, the Royals need to win more than 5 out of, you know, those 14 games when they play good teams, because they're kind of just going to always be playing good teams, especially with the Tigers looking like they are taking the same steps the Royals are.
I think the big question, though, and this might be really at the root of it where you and I are differing, is how good do we really think this team is from a talent perspective? Not as far as the competition they're playing or how easy their schedule is. Genuinely at the root of it, how talented, how good do you and I think this team actually is? I think I probably think they're maybe slightly better than you do, you know, because I'm more optimistic about their chances to be able to hang around based on what I've seen earlier this season. Again, not just from the way that they've won, but the way that in a lot of times they've lost games. I think they're a lot closer than maybe what a lot of people initially thought they would be at the beginning of the season. I think they're a better team overall than probably you do. And so that might be why you're a little bit more pessimistic about it.
I'm trying not to be pessimistic. I'm trying to be realistic. That's where I've been the last 4 days or so. I just want to be realistic, right? I was very excited in the beginning. I've been very bummed lately, and I want to find that middle ground of what reality is. Right? Because I want so badly for this team to get back into playoff contention after the last few years we've dealt with them,
that I think my expectations are probably just a little bit too high. And so I'm trying to bring that back down to reality. That, again, that doesn't mean anything as far as enjoying this summer of baseball at a far higher level than we have been. I still think, no matter what their record is, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pascantino, Salvador Perez are going to be good. You know, the starting pitching, jury's still out a little bit on the consistency and the long-term nature of it. I mean, it's going to be devastating if Cole Reagans all of a sudden doesn't, you know, continue what he built last year and then the first part of this season. I know it's only been one bad start, but, you know, those are the things to watch as much as anything, win-loss record, whatever. What, you know, what do you have? But let's go Royals. Let's get this thing back in order. Don't do this to us. Like, give us this year. We've waited long enough. I think we've put in our time. That's a 6:40 first pitch tonight. You'll have to listen on the Odyssey app tonight. We'll have Wichita State baseball here on the air. It's Michael Wacha. This is what he's here for. You got a veteran. Stop the bleeding a little bit. Kevin Gausman on the mound for the Blue Jays. At some point, he'll get it turned around. He has been really bad, though, thus far this season. Can the Royals take advantage of that? We will see later tonight. It's a 6:40 first pitch against the Blue Jays, and we'll be here to react to it tomorrow. All right, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to continue to play Internet Detective and figure out who stole my money during the break. We'll be back with more Sports Daily after this.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on KFH. Tommy Caster, Jacob Albrock, Jad Chambers producing the program today. Our KFH IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240. Jacob, Jad had to step aside for a quick second. I think he's trying to figure out that whole financial thing. So
yeah,
that's not a fun situation to be in. You know, so I don't know how long it's going to take him, maybe just a few minutes, but
it's been a while since I've got one, but you always hate getting that text from your bank.
It's awful.
Oh, man.
Or like your credit card company, or, you know, you get like an unauthorized charge or something. Have you ever gotten one before? I'm on like a couple different monitoring services, gotten a notification that like your information has been found on the dark web. Have you gotten that notification before? That's a creepy one.
Yeah.
So I got that from, I don't know, it was like a LifeLock or something. And it was, and I had signed up. I was part of like their monitoring. And it's like, your information's been found on the dark web. It's been compromised. Like, great. What does that mean? Does that mean that like I'm going to have, you know, like drug runners coming to my house? Like, what does that mean?
It could mean a lot of things. It could also be really benign, and it could really come back to hurt you. That's one of those things, unfortunately, something like your name getting, you know, because, again, that's something that's not your fault. You know, somebody was hacked. They had a database of names. All of a sudden, the names and all the information that was there was put on the dark web, and it just kind of depends on what the service was. Was this something that you just, you know, got newsletters from, so all they'll have is your name or your email address? Or was this somebody who has your banking information?
Your social security number,
right.
Your address, you know, things like that. And that's the whole, like, identity theft thing. What do you think is a worse situation? Both of these situations are bad.
Oh, yeah.
But what do you think is worse? A situation like what Jacob is dealing with right now, where, you know, you don't know the root cause of it, and where, like, it's nefarious potentially, and you've got to do some investigating and figure out exactly what's going on, get to the bottom of it. Or a situation like Shohei Ohtani, where it's his friend who he trusted and betrayed him. There's really no investigation. You know that the guy did it, but then you're betrayed. Like, what would you rather have happen?
Rather have happen?
I mean, like, both are bad, right? But, like, which one is worse?
Well, if it's somebody you know, at least they're within punching distance.
True.
So you can exact revenge a lot easier.
But wouldn't that, like, cut you deeper, you know, like if it was somebody close to you, like a friend of yours, you know, who stole money from you? Like, that's kind of what I've been thinking about with the Shohei Ohtani situation that's happened over the last few weeks. Is like, that's like his closest friend in America, you know, betraying him. Like, you know, if my information's found on the dark web, I don't know who's on the dark web. Like, if somebody steals a check from me like they did with Jacob potentially, like, I don't know them more than likely. I don't really have a lot of, like, you know, heartfelt feelings one way or another. I'm just mad. as opposed to being hurt.
Yeah. I don't know. Getting hurt would be bad. Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think they're obviously both terrible situations.
Really?
Jacob, we're talking about, you know, the difference between like something in your situation where you have to get to the bottom of it and play detective, or like in the Shohei Ohtani case where there really was no investigation. It was just a really close friend that betrayed him. Which one is worse? Like knowing or not knowing the person who's doing this?
It's interesting because he's Shohei's guy. He knows exactly who it is. And how do you suppress that urge to fight him? Go find him and, you know, kick
his
ass.
That's what Jad said. Jad's like, you know, like, at least, you know, the guy's in punching distance, you know, punching range.
Right.
I'm like, well, yeah, but you're also dealing with like a betrayal and like a hurt emotion as opposed to like bad actors who you're just mad at, you know, and like angry with. I don't know which one's worse.
I don't either. Probably knowing somebody because there is an emotional tie. There's no emotional tie to me and whoever this jackass is. Like, I don't have any emotional tie to them anyway. I mean, I'd like to see them go to jail. Which Shohei's not going to have any problem seeing that part of it. But at the same time, like, yeah, you'd be stuck there because no matter how bad it is, like, do you really want to see your friend go to jail?
If they, you know, they stole all this $16 million from me, sure. Absolutely,
that'd
I would.
Be hard.
I'll be if the you, one to turn had the key.
If you had a genuine emotional connection to him, though, like, I wouldn't want to see that either. Maybe I'm a sucker, but I would be like, man, that kind of sucks that they have to go to jail now. We've had other situations where bad things have happened in the business world, and I know that, like, if I pursue this to the highest level, like, it will be really bad for this person. And so, like, do you do that, or are you like, you know what, just get out of here, like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think that gets a little trickier, and for him, I got so much sympathy for Shohei on this thing. Like, if it really was what we think it was, and he did, that just sucks to on so many levels. It is just absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. My situation today is going to be brutal for different reasons. It's something that I do not have time for. I mean, we're going to have to go in and change accounts. Like, this is going to be a nightmare. Like, come on now. I've made no sense. Like, I am a very impatient person. I don't have time for this. Like, I don't have time to go back through and do all this stuff again. Nobody cares. All right, everybody. my pity party's over. Cry for me today. Pour one out for me. NFL draft's coming, Tommy. You know, we've talked a ton about the quarterbacks. We've talked a little bit about the wide receivers. It is a draft where there are going to be some really good players that are playing other positions. I'm certain of it. But quarterbacks take center stage. The Broncos have said they want one. Well, they go and they trade for Zach Wilson. Do you think that has any impact whatsoever on what they'll do at quarterback in this draft?
It should. I mean, it's very rare, I think, when a team makes a move at quarterback and they end up worse off than they were before they made the move. I'd rather roll with a quarterback room that's led by Jarrett Stidham as opposed to a quarterback room currently led by Zach Wilson. I think that they've got to try to figure out something in the draft. They probably will, I'm guessing. But then it's completely wide open, I think. I think you throw your hands up in the air and just be like, I guess somebody go out there and do something. You know, if it's Stidham or Wilson or whoever this draft pick is, if they end up going that direction, you kind of just have to, I think, have no expectations at all going into the season. Because, you know, if you do, those expectations are certainly not going to pan out. I think this is a situation of Sean Payton believing that he's got the secret formula to make quarterbacks better and to make them really, really good. You know, and I think that you can point a little bit. I'm going to give Peyton a little bit of credit and say that Russell Wilson was better last year than he was the year without Sean Payton in Denver. But I'm not sure that, you know, that's something that can be replicated in this way with the guys they currently have on the roster or even in early first round draft picks. So I'm not optimistic that even if they do take a quarterback early in this draft, that we're going to see any kind of success from the quarterback position in Denver next season.
Yeah, I agree. They don't think they can trade for Zach Wilson. They don't think they can trade for Zach Wilson, then he all of a sudden becomes this great quarterback, do they?
No, I don't think so.
So why do it is one question.
Well, because I think that Sean Payton thinks that he can fix anybody and everybody. I just don't think that it's going to be, you know, I don't think it'll pan out that way if Zach Wilson ends up being the guy in Denver.
I don't think so either because I don't believe in Zach Wilson as the player. Sean Payton can't. I mean, I know his ego's big. Is his ego big enough to not draft? I don't know what position they're going to be in to draft a quarterback anyway. Do you? Like, are they really going to be able to get aggressive enough to outmaneuver these other teams that are in the mix for one of these quarterbacks?
Do they have the firepower to be able to make those moves in the draft? I don't know.
Are they clear? I think they're clear. Let me look. I think they're clear of the Russell Wilson deal now. Let's see what they've got. Because it's going to take a lot because there's going to be a lot of teams in that mix. So they've got round 1, 3, 4, 3 5s, a 6, and a 7. So basically, they'd probably have to give up their one in a swap and maybe that third, and then they just don't pick until the fourth round. That's not good business either for a team that's trying to rebuild. The other thing, though, that's been rumored in any potential trade is they would be willing to trade either Cortland Sutton or Patrick Surtain. So, yeah, a one in one of those guys probably would be enough, I would imagine, to move up, especially Surtain. And quite honestly, like if you're the Chargers, and I know it's in division, like there ain't going to be a better offer than 12 overall and Patrick Surtain for that pick. So if the Broncos really want to go do it, they'd be able to go do it. Cardinals, same thing. If you're not sold on just for sure taking one of those wide receivers there, Patrick Surtain and a 12 for that pick. I mean, or let's say it's Cortland Sutton. Tommy, right now, would you trade away the rights to Marvin Harrison Jr. for Cortland Sutton and the 12th overall pick?
I would. I think I would.
I might.
Yeah, I think I probably would do that. And it's not because I'm not high on Marvin Harrison Jr. It's because if I'm in charge of the Broncos, I'm not happy at all with my quarterback room, and I've got to do something now to try to make that better. And so it goes back to your original question. Why did they trade for Zach Wilson then? I can't think of any kind of like legitimate, rational reason to do that. I just think it's Sean Payton saying that he thinks he can work a miracle with the guy. And, you know, wanted to make that move and bring him in and do that. Because I don't know why you just don't move forward with Stidham and then draft a quarterback, and then you've got a rookie quarterback that you can hopefully have be the face of the franchise. Zach Wilson's been in the league for a couple of years now. He's not shown it at all. So I don't know the upside to this. That's why I said at the very beginning of this conversation, it doesn't happen very often. When a team trades for a quarterback or makes a move with a quarterback and they end up worse off in their room than they were before they made that move. And I think that's where the Broncos are at right now. So I think you absolutely have to give up, whether it's Cortland Sutton or, you know, whoever, Patrick Surtain, to go and get your quarterback of the future. That's what I would do if I were them.
Yeah. They would do it. Would you do it if you were the Chargers? Of course you would. I'm trying to think, like, would you do it if you were on the fence, and who would this involve? Let's say it's the Giants somehow. Let's say it's the Giants, and you are in a position to take the fourth quarterback off the board, which I don't think will happen, but let's just say it stood pat and they were in position to take the fourth quarterback off the board. Would you trade that pick for Surtain and 12? I think you certainly would, wouldn't you? I mean,
yeah, I would.
For sure.
I would.
Unless, though, and again, this is where it gets a little tricky with a team like the Giants, unless you like that fourth quarterback, then there's nothing you would trade for that, right? Like, if you evaluate, maybe that's the fun of the draft day movie. The problem is we all, and we don't do it on purpose, I think it just happens, like, we all consume this stuff so often that we sort of just assume the big boards are what we see on television, right? And generally speaking, ESPN, NFL Network, CBS, like all the major things, like the big boards are pretty much the same, right? They're pretty close, if nothing else. So how do the teams have these guys ranked? Because I would imagine that teams' big boards look nothing like the big boards we see on television, because there's a lot of different things that go into it, and they have, you know, entire departments of scouting people looking at these players. That's what would make the get on the phone and trade portion of this so dang interesting to me, like a behind-the-scenes look. Has any network, like does HBO, have we done this before? And maybe there's too much secret information involved in this, but if we're following everybody in the locker rooms and doing this, why don't we documentary one of these teams on draft day and the calls that
they
make?
I mean, isn't that part of – don't they show some of that in Hard Knocks? I mean, isn't that like kind of like that process?
I don't know. I don't watch Hard Knocks. I'm not sure.
I think like some of those stuff –
although now that you say that –
it's kind of memorialized, I think.
Ballard, the old GM for the Colts, maybe we did get inside one of his drafts. Like that's what we need. Like get that on there. I would watch that like crazy. Just a full-on sit at the table – just like, you know, that draft day movie, I want to hear the phone conversations, or like what was Moneyball. You know, I want to hear those conversations, those real conversations. Now, there's probably a lot of players alienated in those, like getting true opinions from people and listening to the maneuvering of a GM. Also, if you had to like cherry pick a professional job that you could like do anything, I don't know that being an NFL GM would be the greatest job ever. In fact, I don't think it probably would be, because you'd have to deal too much with like numbers and contracts. But being an NFL GM on draft day might be the most fun job that could possibly exist. Right? What's better than that?
Yeah, I
it's real life.
Everybody
fantasy
does
football.
It. Everybody does it on, you know, yeah, fantasy football, on Madden, you know, when they're playing video games or whatever. There's a different level of pressure, though, when you're actually doing it for real. So that's why I'm not sure, like, on if you could do it just for a draft day and then just walk away, you'd be like, I'm done. I did my job. I'm out.
Yeah,
like,
I'd need to hire a guy to crunch the contract numbers and work the salary cap. I'll just do all the other stuff. That's what I would need. One-day gig. I'll be your draft day guy.
You can't even handle, you know, a check issue with your business right now.
Dude, I'm telling you right now.
Much less crunching salary cap numbers in the NFL.
If I'm here with you tomorrow, be surprised. Because I'm about to have to go and, like, change information that will affect, I don't know, 30 different things that come in and out. I want to vomit right now if you want the absolute truth. But we'll just keep rolling forward. Appreciate everybody being on this side journey with me that was unexpected today. Goodness gracious. Anybody got about 10 grand laying around that I can borrow? You know, that'd be nice. Be back. More Sports Daily after this.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. We appreciate everybody listening over the air. We appreciate everybody listening on our live stream. KFHradio.com is a good place to find that. I always tell, like, if you want to hear us, you're not in your car, you want to hear us, just get it on that live stream. You can throw it up at work. Throw an earbud in, nobody will even know you're listening, right? You just put it on in the background and listen in. If you want to comment, you can do that too. If you just find our video stream on Facebook, YouTube, or X, you can find it. You can leave us a comment. You can still interact with the show all you want. But yeah, that stream, that live stream is a great way to take us in if you're not around a radio. You can pull it up on your phone, Tommy, kfhradio.com. Just click that listen live. I do that all the time when I'm mowing the yard. In fact, if I want to listen to a Royals game, if I want to listen to anything, I'll just throw on that live stream. It's a great resource. We also podcast out the show there. Maybe there was a great interview. Maybe you want to hear more about my banking segment, which said nobody ever.
You don't think that's compelling content?
No, you can go back and if you want to see me squirm. By the way, good. Like, if I'm pale in the face or look like I want to vomit, you know, that's you could see that on the video stream. You might be able to hear I don't know if you can hear it. What else in this draft, Tommy, has your attention? I can't look much further than the quarterbacks, honestly. You know, all of these mock drafts, you've got teams moving up, you've got teams moving back. I'm looking at, Will Brinson's. This was about a week ago, and we're wondering where these quarterbacks are going to go. He's got Drake May as the second pick, J.J. McCarthy as the third, and Jaden Daniels through a trade falling all the way to 5, and the Vikings moving up and trading with the Chargers for Jaden Daniels. I don't think it's a consensus. And the more I look at this, the more I think this adds to the intrigue. After Caleb Williams, I'm finding almost no consensus right now between May, McCarthy, and Daniels. Again, I was looking at, you know, somebody's stuff last night. You can find it at fantasypoints.com to give them the love for a lot of the time. I'll look at their scouts because I think they're pretty good. They had McCarthy 1 over Caleb Williams, and they really like Caleb Williams too. They had McCarthy 1, and so it's far from a consensus once you get after Caleb Williams. This Will Brinson CBS mock has, I don't think he has Penix going for a while. So, we don't even know. Yeah, he's got it at pick 30 in round 1. He, by the way, does have the Chiefs taking a wide receiver, Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky. I don't think they're going to reach on a receiver, and that would have been a reach. I don't know, Tommy. I think once we get through Caleb Williams, that's also going to, you know, for a while there, I was like, well, we'll just pencil in Jaden Daniels at number 2. But the more of the different mocks I look at now, that's not how people have it. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Jaden Daniels goes 2 to the Commanders. I think it's Caleb Williams, and then it's kind of just up in the air as far as the rankings of the rest of these quarterbacks.
I told you yesterday, I like Jaden Daniels maybe even more than I like Caleb Williams. So yep. If it were me, I'm not saying that if I'm Ryan Poles and sitting, you know, for the Bears and working for the Bears that, you know, I'm going to pass up the opportunity on Caleb Williams. That's a difficult position that he's being paid a lot of money to be able to figure out, and they've made up their mind on Caleb Williams. What I'm saying, though, is that from an outsider looking in and just a guy that watched both Caleb Williams throughout his career in college and Jaden Daniels in his career and Jaden Daniels win the Heisman, I think I'd almost rather have Jaden Daniels. And so that's why it'll surprise me. It's not going to surprise me that the Bears are taking Caleb Williams. They made that decision. But it will surprise me if the Commanders pass on Jaden Daniels. You know, because I think if he falls like to number 3, I don't think the Patriots are going to trade that number 3 pick. I think they will take Jaden Daniels. I've got a hard time believing that Daniels will fall past number 3 in the draft.
Yeah, maybe. The Patriots, it would surprise all of us in a quarterback-rich class when they definitely need quarterback if they don't. Again, though, like we've said 1,000 times, it really only matters how they evaluate the quarterbacks, right? Maybe they love Drake May, and that's who they're in love with, and they think they can trade down otherwise. Because you got to imagine, too, like the trade partner could just be the Giants, right? And then you could still get a quarterback maybe there at 6. Or, you know, they could be the Vikings, and let's say you really like Penix. If you're the Patriots, maybe you trade down with the Vikings at that point and pick it. What are they at 11? And think you can get Penix at 11, which you probably can. Maybe I still think a team's going to reach on Penix, but let's, you know, it's at least in the realm of possibility to do that if you're the Patriots and try to acquire, you know, an extra pick or 2. That helps them in their overall rebuild. I could see that too. That's why I keep saying like it really only matters who they evaluate and what their prospect ranking is. But you also have to guess at what other teams' prospect rankings are. And that's what makes it challenging. Because it like at the top, it matters what you think of the players, yes, but if you're trying to trade picks and wheel and deal, it also matters what the other teams underneath you think of the picks. If you love a player that you think you can get 5 picks later, that's great, but the risk comes that, well, what if somebody else in those 5 picks also loves that player? then you might lose out on that player. And at that point, you should just take your player, even if it's a reach, I think, quarterback especially. Like if let me put it this way. Let's say the Patriots were in love with Michael Penix, Tommy. If I'm the Patriots and I'm in love with that player at quarterback, I would just take him at three.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like, it's the only way to guarantee you get him. It's the only way. And at quarterback, you can't take chances there. If you think a quarterback is that dude, you just got to go. You can mess around with the other positions, not at that one. If you loved that guy there and you think you could get him five picks later, just take him. Just take him. Don't take the risk. Because what happens if you trade down and you don't get him? I think that's far riskier than just overdrafting by a few spots a guy that you think is really good anyway. 869-1240. We're getting close, man. Draft's going to be here very, very soon, and we'll know all of these answers. We'll be back. More Sports Today. We'll wrap it up after this.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.